You ready?
Sure.
This is an oral history recording at Westminster School on Friday the 8th of November 2019 with Elizabeth Wells, archivist.
Thomas Adamo.
Elias Koulikoundis, Old Westminster.
So, Elias, did you grow up in Greece then?
No, I was born in England.
Born in England.
My father and his parents left England, left Greece, I mean, after the First World War.
Mm-hmm. And did you ever spend any time in Greece?
Oh yes. Easter and summer holidays with my mother's parents.
Did you ever notice a difference in sort of the culture between Greece and England when you stayed with relatives, for example?
Well, I can say that I felt a little foreign in both England and in Greece. I felt a little Greek in England and very English in Greece.
I understand, actually. I'm half Canadian, so when I'm over on that side, I feel English, and when I'm over here, I feel... it's a funny feeling. So, both your parents... your parents were a shipbroker and a ship owner. Did you feel as though you had to sort of follow in the family footsteps, as it were?
Yes, very much so, although I wasn't really suited to that sort of professional life. I did, in fact, follow my family into the shipping business, and funnily enough, I find myself now, at the age of 70, running what's left of it. One of the least qualified members of the family to be doing the job, but there you are, it's fallen to me.
Fair enough, yeah. So, just talking a bit about Westminster now, do you remember arriving at Westminster for the first time?
Yes, I do. I remember quite clearly. Well, I remember the challenge, of course, and you have to forgive that telephone. I'll just let it ring. It'll stop in a moment. And as I was saying to Elizabeth earlier, my first period on Monday morning, my first term, the Lent term of 1963, during a very severe winter, was PT in Little Dean's Yard in the snow.
Oh, goodness, yeah. That must have been
a good first
impression.
Yes,
for sure. So do you remember, for example, seeing the Abbey for the first time?
I don't remember my first Abbey service, but yes, I have good and fond memories of the Abbey.
It's quite spectacular, especially at the start.
Absolutely.
That right there. How do you feel you got on with the boys in your house, just straight away in fifth form?
It was a touch tricky at first, because in 1963 the senior boys seemed very adult. I, coming from a North London prep school rather than a country prep school, rather than a boarding school, and by the way, I was a half regodite. I was a day boy in a boarding house.
Oh, right.
I felt a little awed by the senior boys. I got on very well with my own year immediately. And I don't remember any discord. Not at first.
So you had to share a room with... were all the boys in one room?
Well, I mean, I was in a day room, of course.
Oh, okay. Oh, of course. Sorry. Yes, you were.
In those days, I think the boarders slept, at least the juniors slept in dormitories. In fact, I remember going to one in Barton Street. I had a good friend in my first year who took me to show me what life was like for boarders.
And did you feel, just from that impression, that it was quite restricted?
It was Spartan. Spartan than I think would be tolerated these days, but it wasn't Victorian. It wasn't brutal or miserable in any way. It was probably cold. That definitely, but apart from that, I think the conditions were humane enough.
Very nice. Just touching on, you mentioned it didn't feel Victorian. Obviously, the 1960s was sort of a period of progression and sort of change, Bob Dylan writes, the times they were changing. To what extent did you feel that was present at Westminster in terms of the culture?
Well, it was, of course, as my first year, 1963, was before all that really started.
Right.
But it had a very strong impression in Westminster, not on... on the curriculum or on the masters, But certainly on the boys,
mm-hmm.
to a certain extent. I mean, there was very little, how should I put it, very little dressing up.
Right.
Let's say there couldn't be, not at the school. But you could tell, I remember one boy turning up in his sub-fusc grey suit and house tie and everything, and high-heeled cowboy boots. that made
an
impression.
Splash.
Let's put it
yes.
that way at the time.
Yes. Oh, that's very interesting, yes. Did you feel as though, again, that when I mentioned that the culture of the school was changing, from in terms of the institution, do you think it was going from a more Victorian style of teaching or not?
I don't think the teaching was Victorian even
even
to begin with. We were very lucky, very fortunate, rather, at Westminster in the 60s. I suppose this must have started in the decade before, to have benefited from a migration, let's say, of Jewish intellectuals from Nazi Germany or Austria, in the case of one brilliant teacher whom I remember with great affection. So we were taught by people who were actually distinguished enough to be teaching at university, but found a job at Westminster and stayed there. So that was by no means the norm for British public schools at that time. I think we were privileged and a little ahead of the standards in other schools.
I think that's fair.
At least in the sense of being taught in a more cosmopolitan way.
Right.
I don't
yes.
suppose I could claim to be ahead of the intellectual standard in other schools such as Winchester. For example, but we were certainly taught in a more cosmopolitan fashion,
sort of
by
less
people who had come from.
Right. Yes. So, do you remember teachers specifically with fondness?
Yes. The two who taught me French, for instance, G. A. Shepherd, a very jolly, roly-poly sort of teacher, very approachable,
yes.
known obviously after his initials as Gas. and it suited him beautifully. I don't know why I should say that, but it did. And Ernst Sanger, who was the head of the modern languages department, and I specialised in modern languages, who turned that first floor classroom in Ashburnham into a sort of club. It was an intellectual circle.
How lovely!
He was a very clever man and very urbane, mm-hmm. and taught us style as well as French.
Well, I would argue that's part of the French
experience. Absolutely, very useful lesson.
Yeah, definitely. I've just got it down here as well. Do you remember your housemaster as well?
I remember all three of them.
Oh, three
Frank Kilvington, my first.
Okay.
Austere, taught Latin, but not unapproachable, with a twinkle. Martin Rogers, who has only recently died, I read the obituary in the Eliza, who was a warm, very youthful man, and Ron French, rather military, but again gentle man. I'm sure he was a gentleman too.
Gentle space man.
Yes. Yes, I was lucky, though I had three excellent housemasters.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that your old French teacher turned that floor into almost a social club.
He saw to it that the room was redecorated so that it didn't look like a classroom. He put a floral wallpaper on the walls and hung reproductions of Manet, not just tacked to the walls, but framed as though it were a sort of JCR, you could say.
All right.
Actually, rather an effeminate JCR, it turned out to be, but that was accidental, I think. Anyway, it was not, and we didn't sit facing a blackboard or facing Dr. Sanger's table. We sat around a large table with Dr. Sanger, as though the lessons were discussions.
I think that's something that is still really present today.
It was
very ahead of its time.
Exactly, it was revolutionary in the 60s.
Did you take part in any after-school clubs or
Not at Westminster,
no.
No. As a day boy, my day ended in the afternoon.
Yes. You didn't mention.
Well, there were things I could have been a member of, but no, I chose to go home.
Fair enough. Did you take part in station as well, sports?
Yes. I wasn't really very athletic in any way, but I was a cross country runner.
Oh, so it's the same. I also.
Do you still go to Grove Park?
St. James's Park now.
Oh, really? That was my first run. Okay. Again, in that first term, the Lent term of 1963, in the snow.
In the snow. Yeah, we've had a few snow runs since then, yeah.
Yes, I'm sure.
But
I was a reasonable cross-country runner. Mm. I wish I'd had a different mindset, though, because I was very thin when I was at school and could have been a lot faster than I was. But I had a loser's mentality. My place was at the back. It's just stupid. It's a shame.
I think I suffer from that a bit too, because I have a brother who's very athletic, and throughout my whole childhood I was always thought I'm going to be behind him this whole time.
Oh,
but
what a challenge. Yes, I see.
Anyway, sorry, did you want to say
I was going to ask if you ran the Bringsty Relay? Was that a race?
That existed, but I never ran it.
Okay.
I wasn't quite in that class.
Yeah. So Grove Park, we sold, I think, quite a while ago. Those playing fields, yes, and I think there's houses now.
It was a sort of setup that would probably not be acceptable today because of the lack of security. We had to make our own way to Charing Cross, take a suburban train to Grove Park, an ordinary train, in separate compartments, one of those carriages without corridors. You see what I mean? Mm. So there were endless opportunities for mischief, or even abuse, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything of that sort ever occurring, but it certainly was a lot freer a way of getting about than would be acceptable today.
And what was your commute like to school? Where were your...
Oh dear.
Where were you based?
Oh dear. Well, I was discreet about it, but my parents' chauffeur would drive me to school. This is Greek chauffeur stuff we're talking about now. There was another boy, a contemporary of mine, whose family chauffeur would drive him to school in a much grander car than mine, than my father's, that is. But he, clinging to impeccable socialist credentials, would leave the car in Tothill Street and walk the rest of the way. He was spotted, though.
That's funny. I'm on my little sheet of questions. I'm happy to just field anything from you if you want to know anything about Pride Society or things that have happened.
Well, I can't imagine. I mean, you've told me how the Pride Society was set up.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that I'm going to mention my own. Well, I had no homosexual experiences at Westminster, I don't remember of anybody at the school who acknowledged openly his homosexuality. In fact, the only members of the school in my 4 years about whom I know that they are or were homosexual is because I knew them very well after the school.
Oh, right. So did you feel that there was quite a pressure to be much more discreet about it?
It wasn't from the school.
Not from the school.
That was the atmosphere of the time.
Okay.
Was there ever any homophobic bullying at the school?
No.
It wasn't.
None. There was a certain slightly lubricious chuckling over certain people who were known to be playful, shall we put it that way. Because I can't say you can call it active homosexuality. This was teenage sexual expression. And it was not unknown at Westminster, but it was not identified with homosexuality. And in fact, in answer to your question, I've suddenly remembered one of my contemporaries who was outrageously effeminate, so much so that he was given a girl's nickname. But it was in a friendly way. He was never bullied. He was never in the least bit self-conscious about it. He was accepted with a certain amount of amusement, but altogether in a tolerant way.
So did you almost feel as though Westminster was sort of a more tolerant space than the rest?
Oh, undoubtedly. Undoubtedly. My younger brother went to Harrow, and from what I know from his descriptions, Harrow was a less... I don't think I can go as far as to say it was less tolerant, but it was a less
worldly
place, exactly.
Was there any kind of acknowledgement of sexuality at the school? As an all-male environment, was that ever really talked about?
It was never really discussed. There was a certain amount of casual homosexual activity, about which I know very little because I was a day boy, but no sexual topics were ever discussed in the 1960s.
So,
the female of the species was very largely unknown to everybody at the school.
So you felt it was rather more unspoken than...
I was about to say unspeakable. That's not what I mean at all.
No.
It was unspoken. Yes.
Unspoken, yes. Regarding, you were obviously at the school during 1967 when the decision legalizing homosexuality came about. Did you feel as though there was a reaction within the school to that, or...?
That's an interesting question, because the answer is I was largely unaware of the fact that the law had changed, just as I was largely unaware of the fact that before then homosexual activity or homosexual acts were, even in private, were punishable by law. Now, at this point, I'm going to give an example of the attitude of the time, or perhaps it's slightly behind the time. When I came out to my parents in 1971, the law had been relaxed for years, and homosexual activity in private was no longer punishable. But my father's first reaction, which gave me pause later on in life, later on when I look back on it, anyway, was to say to me, "You realize you will be a criminal all your life." He hadn't quite caught up with the change in the law, and having lived in England since 1919, spent most of his life, not that he was in any way homosexual himself, but not unaware of the fact that homosexuals usually ended up in the dock and in prison afterwards. I was touched by that later when I look back on it, because I thought, instead of ranting at me about, I don't know, sins against nature and disgrace to the family or any of that sort of thing, his first thought was for my future, for the fact that I was placing myself outside the law. And I thought, in a way, although it didn't hit me at the time, but I thought actually it was rather a touching reaction. Although he was very upset. Both my parents were very upset. It was not the sort of thing that was easily acceptable by most people in those days. And I think I should think it was very rare in my generation for homosexuals of either gender not to have had to face some kind of family crisis.
It is still quite touching that his first thought.
When I think back, I think that was a very affectionate reaction.
In its own sort of way. If Pride Society had been around in the 60s, would you have attended?
Oh, I think... Well, it's inconceivable that it would have been around for a start.
Obviously, but...
If somebody had had the... courage to and the organizational capacity to start something entirely unofficial, I would call it a whispering group.
Right.
I think that I feel certain that I should have joined it. But again, this is pure conjecture.
Right.
Because there wasn't even anything approaching a whispering group. I don't remember any discussion in the abstract about homosexuality at Westminster. Those of us who were kept it to ourselves.
understandable. Were there societies as such at Westminster, just generally? Were there sort of groups discussing certain topics, or almost like clubs back then?
Well, again, because I was a day boy, I wasn't really part of that. But yes, I think there were what you might call discussion groups. I can't really tell you on what subjects, but they would have been on shall we say, safe topics, politics. Or,
safe like politics.
Right, it's safe enough at the time. It doesn't this year.
Oh, yes, quite.
Was the religious side of school strong? How often were you
Well,
having...
yes, it was. This is a Church of England school, is a Church of England school. Mourning Abbey was more than just a ritual, although it was a delightful ritual, I'll tell you. My sense of religious glamour was fed daily by Mourning Abbey. Latin prayers, of course, still are an important part of the school's programme. And we were given religious instruction. But we weren't constrained to live a religious life or anything of that intensity. Naturally, there were a certain number of boys at the school who were Jewish, there were a certain number of boys at the school who were Roman Catholic, and I think there may have been one or two. There was certainly one Hindu, so I don't really know which of the various Hindu religions he belonged to. They were never made to feel other, as it were. They were Westminster boys first, and members of their religious community second, as far as the school was concerned, I mean.
Do you think having this range of teachers from slightly different backgrounds might have helped kind of create that cosmopolitan atmosphere?
Undoubtedly. I consider it the chief treasure that I took away from my 4 years here. The fact that I was taught by these urbane, sophisticated Europeans.
Mm-hmm. How much of a hand did the headmaster at the time have in sort of facilitating that atmosphere?
John Carlton was a remote figure as far as the boys were concerned. I think if you were in the English stream, you were very senior and quite bright, you got sort of tutorials given by John Carlton, who was married to a writer called Janet Adam Smith, who had a great reputation in her day. He was an elegant but rather remote figure as far as the rest of the school was concerned. He looked superb in that long red robe.
And did you follow a modern languages stream
yes,
then?
Yes, yeah. I did.
Okay. At what point did you have to make that choice?
It must have been after the year after O levels, so when I was in, as I moved into the remove. Mm. I had already a good grounding in French before I came to Westminster, because I spoke a lot of French at home. Very much enjoyed German from the very first, it seemed natural for me to fall into that group. And as I say, I responded to the teachers. Mm-hmm. Had I been a scientist, I would have been taught by, for instance, Hepburn Scott, who we mentioned earlier. The teachers would have been British, and not that that makes any real difference. The teaching at Westminster was more, I think I'm right in saying, more open-minded, perhaps, than in some other schools. Not perhaps the top schools, but in many of the other prep schools, public schools of that decade.
Do you think being in London was part of that, sort of being so close to the metropolis?
Yes.
And
yes, definitely.
And did you ever, were there sort of school outings in the evenings or sort of sense of taking advantage of...
I remember one of my contemporaries used to go to Covent Garden, practically lived in Covent Garden. but I think that was a personal initiative. at the end of that first term, the Lent term of 1963, when the snow froze and stayed on the frost lasted until April, I think, when no station was possible, no real station was possible, except for running around St. James's Park, we were taken to visit factories. Joe Lyon's factory in Hammersmith, for instance, or the Pierce Duff Custard Factory, which was somewhere near London Bridge Station, I remember.
And was that to learn or about...
Yeah, well, it was an odd experience. What were we doing marching around like a sort of trades union delegation?
Anything to keep you occupied.
It was anything to keep us occupied. I think they were really racking their brains to think of something to replace station.
And I was wondering what your interaction was like with your contemporaries. So you mentioned that you had good friends made good friends within your year group, and that another boy showed you his boarding room in Barton Street. Was going in and out of other houses a common thing, or
not at all? Not at all. The houses kept very much to themselves. I wouldn't say it was unheard of, nor that it was forbidden, but it was just not something that people did. They met in the classroom, they met at school, and they met in college hall, unless they had their own dining halls, as Rigaud's did. But apart from that, I think the houses stayed quite separate as far as social life was concerned within the house. My close friends at Westminster were both in the same house as I.
And what was the discipline like within the house? Were there monitors?
Yes, the discipline became gradually less austere, less frightening, let's say, as one grew older, naturally. But also, there wasn't, by the time I was never a prefect or a monitor, but by the time I was a senior in 1967, there simply wasn't the same kind of stuttering awe shown to us by the new boys that we showed the seniors of 1963 or 64. Somehow we tended to get younger, I guess.
And were there any of those sort of hangovers of corporal punishment or fagging?
I don't remember. There was fagging, yes. Okay. It was abolished, I think, certainly in 1963. I can't remember whether it was the play term, but it was very shortly after. I had to take a fagging test, but as a day boy I didn't really get to do much actual fagging. But I guess the junior boarders did, but it was very quickly dropped at Westminster. And as for corporal punishment, I don't remember any occasion, any instance at all of corporal punishment.
What happened if you were naughty? Do you know?
Well,
by the detentions or lines.
On one occasion, I won't be specific about it. I was very naughty. I did something which went severely against the rules of the school, and I was up before Frank Kildington, my housemaster at the time. I was very very young and very immature for my age, and got caught up in an infiltration in the school of immoral outside influences. I don't really want to be more specific than that. It was nothing to do with homosexuality, but it had to do with pornography. And that was a serious situation. It could have got me expelled, but it didn't, because my housemaster realized that I was way out of my depth and had found myself being influenced by people who were exploiting my innocence. And that was the end of the matter. So that was, that was a serious misdemeanor involving myself and the treatment I received was, if anything, generous and humane.
Was there, I mean, now parents come to the school quite regularly, there are reports and parents' evenings. To what extent were your parents aware of what was going on at school? And
There were their parents' evenings. I remember one up Rigo's and one up school, which my parents attended. The one up Rigo's I recall with affection because you know that my late partner and I knew each other from Westminster. We were contemporaries in both up Rigo's and were very close friends from his first term, my second term, and we remained close until his death 2 years ago. The reason I recall this particular parents' evening is because my father, who was not a very chatty sort of person and not given to networking, not that the word existed in those days, but a lot of the other parents did a great deal of that. And Alex's father was very similar. And I remember them standing against the wall, not taking part in the gathering at all, and sort of chatting desperately to each other. And I thought that was rather nice because they didn't know at the time that their sons were going to live together for so long, as it were.
And I wondered if you'd talk a little bit more about Alexander and.
Well, yes, I'd be delighted to actually, because it was. There's another great treasure that came to my life through Westminster. Alex and I became quite good friends before we became very good friends, before we became intimate friends. Before, some years after we left the school, we became lovers. The whole thing drifted logically from one step to the other without much ever being discussed, should we say. We were together with Richard McKenna, also at up Rigo's, in fact head of house in 1967. We were a sort of gang of three. We would go out to tea somewhere in Soho, let's say. There was it still exists actually. There's a French pâtisserie in Soho that we used to like to go to. Or we went to a chain called the Golden Egg, which again was very much of its time. So we would go off for a little treat after school before I went home and they went back to the house. And we got to be identified so much as a trio walking around together that somebody, I don't know who, ran our three surnames together, McKenna, Carswell and Kulakundis, and called us the Macarundis. I don't know who it was.
Wishy.
And was the food terrible at school? Was this a relief to
it
get
was,
out?
It was pretty awful at the time. It wasn't squalid, and it wasn't, how shall I put it? It wasn't particularly healthy. Everything was tinned, as far as I remember. Mm. Tinned mince, tinned cut macaroni, tinned potatoes. Potatoes used to come ready peeled in great big tins. I saw them delivered to College Hall. So there was a naffy mentality. There was a sort of military supply mentality about the school at the time. I mean, I can't say that the food was inedible, but it wasn't very nice.
Did people ever sort of pick up on your close friendship with Alex at all?
Yes, I do remember one occasion which comes close, I suppose, to a homophobic gesture. Mm-hmm. In Lower Hall, up Rigo's, Alex and I had our heads together, I mean very much our heads together, over something that we were doing together. And I remember two of the other boys sniggering mm-hmm. about that. That is about the only time, in fact not about, it is the only time, I remember any homophobic reaction to any action, gesture, appearance involving me anyway.
And did you both go on to university together?
No, Alex left the school before I did. He had a good friendship with Theo Zinn, whom you know a lot about, surely. Theo was very protective of Alex in a avuncular sort of way. He lived near Alex's parents in Godalming. Alex's parents also lived in Surrey. And Alex used to see him at weekends, I seem to remember. This was a perfectly innocent friendship. But it was affectionate and avuncular, as I said before. And it was on Theo's advice that Alex, I think I put that in the words that I spoke at Alex's memorial service, which were printed in the magazine. It was on Theo's advice that Alex, having had poor results from his A-levels, decided to give up the idea of going to university and to go to a business school instead. Mm. And he did, and he did very well there, and went on to have a notable business career, shall we say. I went to King's College in London and read law, according to my father's wishes, very unsuccessfully, and switched to modern languages, few, much more happily.
When you left Westminster, did you miss it initially, or did you feel as though you'd left some sort of bubble?
I left with a certain amount of regret. Mm. Yes, I think I moved on very quickly, but I left with a certain amount of regret. Alex, who was not particularly happy at Westminster, I remember left with no regrets at all. Mm. And although we did visit the school again in later life, occasionally, it wasn't very often, and it was usually on my initiative rather than Alex's.
Well, what was some of your favourite memories of Alex or you two at Westminster?
The two of us at Westminster. Well, at the risk of sounding a little melodramatic, when Alex was actually dying, I asked him to remember. I don't think he was conscious or able to hear me, but anyway, I asked him to remember what it felt like walking out of school after the end of the last period, along Horse Guards Parade and up the Duke of York steps to go and have tea at Fortnum's and Mason's. We did that occasionally. I thought that I'd leave him with that memory of the two of us together.
That's lovely. Do you have anything that you'd like to say that we haven't given you an opportunity to say?
Well, no thanks for the offer, but no, I don't. I think your questions between the two of you have covered my experience at Westminster pretty thoroughly.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Nice to meet you both.